Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Miles, this is a very special episode. Our guest today is an expert author of a book that I will just say explained a lot, explained everything about how modern America operates in a lot of respects.
And you'll even hear me admit in the beginning, I'm like, I was going around a lot of my adult life vaguely understanding what we're talking about. And then, but hearing it act properly and like reading it, have it be properly articulated by someone who's like looking at it from a legal standpoint, you're like, oh, that's fucking terrible. I mean, like I knew that broadly, but this is, it gives it so much texture in a way that.
Yeah. But it might seem at first like a little depressing because it's like, it's giving you really good texture on like why things are bad in certain ways. But I think ultimately it's kind of hopeful because it at least gives you an understanding of how things are actually operating. So we're going to talk to our expert guest, Brendan Belew, for a couple acts here for like the next 40 minutes. We'll come back and close things out after that. So we will talk to you guys in a bit.
Just a caveat. I don't speak to the feds normally. So please don't. I don't want you guys writing in about how.
Yeah. I made Miles do it. I said it's always been fine for me. So come along, friend. Let's talk to the feds. What is something from your search history?
That's first, huh?
Yeah, it doesn't need to be. We could also go overrated.
No, it's fine. I'm just surprised. No,
you've only done the show 900
times. We haven't rearranged. Search history has probably been first for 1,500 episodes. Is that how many we've done?
At a minimum.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because it's last on the list of things that you send out that you're going to talk about.
Well, we like to keep you off guard so that maybe you give us your real search history instead of the pretty search history you want people to believe.
So anyway, I just know that I'm angry right up top.
Off top. The
last thing that I Googled was, where does Bandit work?
If
you have a kid who's maybe just a little younger than mine. Or too old.
Boy.
What's your youngest?
Bloy. Jack? Mine is 5 years old.
Okay, so he's in it. It's Bloy. Yeah. But what's funny about Bluey is that they have jobs and they have like dog jobs.
Oh,
and
wait, which one's Blue? Wait, who's Bandit?
Oh, Bandit so is Bandit, the father.
Yeah, he's the dad. He's
the
Bluey
of all fathers existence.
I've seen the Bluey. I definitely seen a couple episodes. Oh, so Bandit is like the got it.
Yeah, so if
Bandit.
You don't know, Bluey is like one of the only shows that you can watch as an adult, like a kid show. I think it's like SpongeBob, you know, where it's like the jokes are good enough, you know, and it feels good enough that adults watch it. Anyway.
Right.
It feels good. It's also, it can be like heartbreaking. It's very
It can
good.
Be heartbreaking?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I look at it as like a blueprint for how to interact with your kids. Because like the parents just yes and everything and yeah. explain everything and they're just so nice
and so patient, so patient. Like they have like Zen Buddhist levels of patience with their children, and that is one of the first questions that occurs to you watching it is like, so the dad's just like unemployed or something? What's going on? Why is he spending an entire day?
Because the show's not about their jobs. It's about the, you know, how he does. So, but the both the parents have dog jobs, which I think is really funny.
Like what?
Like he's an archaeologist, meaning that he digs up bones.
That's funny. Okay.
And the mom, Chili,
just shits on the sidewalk?
Is a sidewalk shitter.
Big dumps on the sidewalk.
She's a bomb sniffing dog at the airport.
No.
Yeah.
Wait, there's so
which implies the presence
terrorism?
Of domestic and international terrorism.
But
in
they're
the
in Australia, there's not as much of a worry.
Yeah. Aussie's Ike gang, who's bringing bombs into your country?
No one, right. Not with Chili on the loose.
Wait, do they ever, do they reference, like, do you ever go to work with the dad and be like, oh, he's doing this? And like, oh, this mom is, you know, sniffing up bombs and shit.
I don't know if they know she's a mom at work, you know?
Oh, wait,
right.
Hold on a second.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's not her only identity.
Because women at work often face extra challenges being mothers.
This is true.
And some of them have really mean bosses. And my wife actually has a very mean, mean, mean boss.
Oh, no.
At her office. Wow. And it's you.
Sounds horrible. Oh, it's me. That's right. I am pretty bad. What you see, not what you get with this podcast. This whole personality.
Classic jerk. Hiding it in front of almost everybody every time you ever open up your mouth.
Yeah, it's good. I'm coming for him. I'm because I think I can squeeze a little more productivity out of them with the force of my personality, Nick.
For sure, for sure.
And my hunger for conflict. Those are the two things that drive me.
And you started that 7-day work week for her, which she loves.
That's right. Yep. It's how the only way we'll have it. I don't think we're fully up on Bluey, or at least I don't think I've watched every episode of Bluey with my kids.
Yeah.
They do. We don't like go to work with them ever, right? Is this just lore?
No, you don't go to work with them. They just talk about it like sometimes, but like not enough to even like know. Like I don't know their names because they don't mention it enough. It's only like if another adult they see out calls them by their first name.
Yeah. Bandit and Chili.
Yeah. But
yeah.
You know.
Some great Australian accents. Like the really makes you fond of I guess it just makes you fond of everything that it touches.
Yo, I was reading recently they had to change an episode that hadn't aired here, just in Australia, that included fat shaming because they're very worried about everything.
And oh, so, really? Like, right, but it's when you're ascribing some kind of value to it
it's bad.
Like it's like the same thing too. I've talked about like in like Asian culture, because you'd be like, "Hey, you're bald," or like, "Wow, look at your pimples." Like, you know, it's like a lot of cultures don't have like a. There's no like you just go straight to it. There's like it's very direct, and especially when you talk about someone's looks. And I was talking about that with like my wife. And I was talking like, oh, yeah, we do that in Japan all the time. She's like, yeah, but that's like toxic. And I'm like,
right.
Oh, yeah. Whoa. That's true. Ha ha. Didn't think of that.
I feel like bald shaming is still pretty common, like in the U.S. at the very least. Like,
oh, yeah.
No, nobody's trying to speak up for the bald.
Well, I think it's because it's like, you know, because we live in such a patriarchal society.
Yeah.
It's like,
they're like, no, fuck you guys.
They're talking about men. Yeah.
The only show that really talks about being bald is Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand that people hate bald people.
Hate
you
the bald.
Bald fuck, Jit Larry.
Yo, I just got on minoxidil.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
I started taking hair loss pills or growth or whatever. Because I just got
makes it loss?
You know? I'm not bald, but I've got enough.
You've got a good head of hair.
I've got enough of a widow's
peak. Oh, you're starting to measure
it?
You're starting to measure it? You're like,
I can notice it.
You got the calipers out and went from your eyebrow bone to your hairline and we're like, it's past the point where I need
so specific.
That's the one where that's like a pencil holder / knife.
That's the compass.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a compass.
Calipers pencil are like used in. Knife. Yeah, that thing is.
That's how I used it in school.
It's wild. That was like the first weapon you could bring to school.
Yeah, was allowable in school.
But isn't the compass the ruler? Or no, those both called compass?
No, that's a protractor.
Protractor.
That's a protractor.
Yeah. For angles and stuff?
Yeah.
Shit.
The way you said shit, like a lot, like you just fucked up majorly with that.
You just fucked
shit.
Up. Hey, Nick, you just fucked up big time, man. Yeah, I don't know what
I just
to tell
bought
you.
My kid school supplies, and I really got him the wrong thing.
you got him a compass. That's, they generally don't give those to kids.
I got him a whole orienteering set.
Yeah, I don't know that phrase, but
oh, that's that's where you would have a compass. That's for like looking, you know, like trekking the woods. Or
Nick,
whatever.
What's something you think is overrated? What is something, Caitlin, you think is overrated?
I think that, and this might be controversial, but I think that nachos are overrated, especially the kind you get as like at a restaurant when they like load on a bunch of, you know, ground beef and cheese and sour cream and mm-hmm. all that stuff. Mm. I think the flavors are good, but the execution is bad because they all get the chips get soggy almost immediately.
Mm.
It is very hard to get a good like distribution of all the toppings onto one chip.
Yeah,
because you got one that's like nothing but beef, which is gonna be my new catchphrase. Nothing but beef.
Podcast. Nothing but beef. Yeah.
Get out of my swamp. And if you come in my swamp, there's nothing but beef here for
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then other ones, it's like, you know, only sour cream. It's just, I think, again, poorly executed.
How would you optimize? Because my biggest, gripe with bad nachos at a restaurant is it's all top heavy. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so you have it all on top. And then underneath is just a bunch of dry chips. And then you got to kind of use those to like scrape at the top. I like when people layer them. I'm not as mm-hmm. upset about the crunchiness because for me, I just want to have just shit on every chip basically is how I look at it. But how would you optimize if we're going to get around this?
I think we just need to do, and this is this will become a surface area problem because you're mm-hmm. going to need a big ass tray.
Yeah.
But just like one single layer of chips. And then the toppings evenly distribute. So you're talking like a tray. It's going to need to be like
14 feet long.
Yeah. 3 by 3 feet kind of thing.
Smaller. Yeah.
The best strategy I've ever witnessed, my friend Blake in high school, shout out Blake, went through and would put cheese on each chip and then a dollop of salsa like on top of the cheese. And that would keep it from getting, and then you put it in the microwave. It is very time intensive, but it is truly the best way to do nachos is think of each chip as its own moment, its own nacho that you are, as opposed to just dumping chips out and then like kind of haphazardly scattering toppings across.
They're not just numbers on a spreadsheet, man.
Yeah.
They're individual chips.
Yeah.
I get it.
Each chip is a moment. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Restaurant nachos are a real mess that I still love. I just
vehemently disagree. Do you order them though? I feel like I have to. There always needs to be one person who's really into nachos to order nachos.
Should we do the nachos, guys?
Yeah, exactly. That kind of person. I'm like, well, you know, I was even like, because they look really good. And I'm like, fine, fuck it, get the nachos. Like, it's
they always look good.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. But you go after nachos pretty consistently, Caitlin?
No, I avoid them for the reason that I think they're overrated.
Oh, so if someone said, hey, should we get them? You're like, let me tell you why. Everyone open up your phone.
Actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I promised myself I wouldn't do this today, but.
Yeah. So I'm like, let's get whatever. I don't know. The sampler platter. Clearly, I'm only going to Applebee's like restaurants. I'm like, let's get the mozzarella sticks. But no nachos for me.
Mm.
Yeah. What a shame.
I love to get some nachos. I like to. I have ordered nachos as a main course before.
Wow. Brave.
Just eat them by myself.
Pardon me.
Fending people off with my arms. Yeah.
Anyway, what's something that's underrated, Brandy?
If you're having I've had a rough couple of weeks with some stuff, and I decided, you know what, fuck it, I'm gonna get my car detailed because I just was like, if my car's nice, it's like a reset. Nice.
Yeah.
And I think like that's something that like I have not done a lot in my life, and I was like, oh shit, this actually does make me feel really like really good to have like a car that just like is clean, it's got no trash, there's no dust, there's no dirt.
Yeah.
It just feels new. It just feels nice. Yeah.
I'm not the best at taking care of my vehicle.
Yeah.
On the outside. Like, you know, I have my passenger seat is, I go in the carpool lane because I have so many receipts in my passenger seat. It looks like a human being is riding with me. That's kind of the state of my car at times. But now, like with a child, I've become much better at it. But the way I love going to like the fucking car wash now. I feel the same way. I'm like, I sit there. Like, I bring a fucking newspaper, like I'm fucking 70 and shit, and be like, check that out, leave it for the next person. Boom.
Yeah.
What were you saying, Jackie?
I also, listen, it's nice. I love a car wash. I love, like, going to the car wash and having them clean it and see it and having them wipe it and walk around and inspect it. It's like, hey, brother, you missed the spot. Like, I love that shit. I love it. But I also still love, I just did this recently because I didn't have enough time to, like, get a real car wash. So I just went through like one of the drive-through joints.
Yeah.
Shit is still lovely. It's still a lovely time.
How often do you see somebody in the self, like the do it or like the drive-through ones, and they're about to crash into everybody else? Like, cause I know some of them, like you have to put in neutral. Other times people don't know what to do. Their shit is moving inside and like you see them shut it down and someone's got to pull somebody out and be like, you're about to fucking rear end this other car.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I see that every time I go through one of those.
The only one I've been going to recently is the like little gas station ones that show.
Yeah.
So like you just stay in place and the thing moves around you.
Oh, okay.
I haven't found too many ones that like you move through a whole thing.
Oh yeah. They have a few of those like in the valley that I used to go to. There's one in
It'd
be like, It would, sometimes I've saw people with some near misses and people were getting pretty turned up. But yeah, the thing about like, you know, having a rough time too, I was just saying this on like Monday's show, been having like, you know, stressful shit going on, whatever. But like the thing that I always have to remind myself is when I'm feeling shitty is to not get in the pattern of telling myself, don't feel shitty. Like you're like, why you feel shitty? This is stupid. You shouldn't feel bad. You should feel good. Why are you doing this? And like, I have to kind of be like, okay, hold on. I'm a human. So that's normal. And then, like, let me just operate from that space of being like, it's all good. Now let's try and move
totally
up bit by bit. Because, yeah, I'm such a, like, ruminator. Oh, shit. Mm-hmm. The way I can get lost in my own fucking mind, let me tell you, I look like I'm warging from fucking Game of Thrones or some shit the way my eyes go back with my intrusive thoughts.
Yeah, it's just good to do something good for yourself every once in a while. And, like, that's one that, like, I had never really thought about. That I was like, you know what? I'm in my car so much. It could be nice. This is a space that could also just be nice.
Yeah.
And wouldn't thought 100%. About it. But yeah.
100%.
I recommend.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the Supreme Court. You know, they go back and forth. Sometimes they're fucking doing the right thing. Sometimes they're just caping for white supremacy all over again. Anyway, we'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life. Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
And we're back. So that story about how their insight into staffing was to trick people into using doctors outside of their network is just one of the stories in your book that is incredibly infuriating. There's also the worst hacking disaster in U.S. history. Do you want to talk about how that came about in partnership with private equity?
Yeah. So two private equity firms bought up the tech company SolarWinds, which provides a lot of sort of like boring IT and security services to companies. Looking through the documents in SolarWinds' public filings, it appears that after it was bought by a private equity firm, staffing at the company was cut. And at least according to their public disclosures, a lot of their engineering work was moved overseas, including to, among other countries, Belarus, which is...
Oh, great.
Yeah. In the news recently.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah.
Oh, Lukashenko, great guy. Yeah.
Whether that's causal or not, ultimately SolarWinds suffered what one government official called the greatest hack in United States history. I believe the Department of Defense, Treasury, State, Justice, and others were all compromised. And at least it appears on sort of initial reporting that the leaders of the private equity firms may have dumped stock in advance of the public disclosure of that. Now, there's an investigation going on to that at the SEC. I don't know what the outcome of it was. But it was another example of, you know, you have this industry, you know, sort of IT security that really needs to be thinking in terms of years and really decades for how to make sure that you've got a secure product when you're working with the government. And they're being bought or controlled by private equity firms that are trying to make a profit, you know, in a matter of months or a matter of years. And it's just a very different perspective for how to run these businesses.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's right. Similar to the, you know, getting involved in ER staffing, they also took over the operation of 911 calls at one point. Like just all these things that, yeah, it just... When you read stories of businesses that become successful over a long period of time, like it's really about fixating on like how to do the one thing that they do for customers like better than anyone else. And time again, it seems like when these private equity firms come in, like it's just like that is the third or fourth thing that they're interested in. And the most interesting thing is delivering value for themselves and getting financial success.
It's interesting, you know, you look at the biographies of folks that run private equity firms, and it's, you know, it's not a critique of them, it's not a surprise, but, you know, it's generally folks that do not have experience in sales or IT or engineering or marketing or logistics. It's folks with a financial background. And so when they approach these companies, typically, you know, not always, but typically, you know, what they're trying to make are essentially sort of financial changes to these businesses that's going to, you know, get a fairly quick return. You know, you look at the diversity of what some of these private equity firms buy into. You know, it's a plastic logistics company, it's a municipal water service, and it's the dating app Bumble, you know? And it's right. Like one person doesn't really have the expertise to run all those different kinds of companies.
Yeah, they just know how to make line go up.
Right.
And it's sort of like, oh, wait, what does that mean? It's like, well, we're not going to have enough nurses. I don't know, man. But then when I look at these projections, I like what I'm seeing. Let's do that. Yeah. And figuring out afterwards. What's really difficult is like we hear about all this. It is so apparent to everyone. You know, like I think at this point, even when everyone listening is like, right, okay, pirate equity, bad, or like not necessarily out here for everyone's best interest. But then you think about like a lot of the examples that you give in your book, like it's also very, very hard to hold these fucking people to account because of the nature of like all of the advantages that these companies have, whether it's through lobbying, whether it's through like a revolving door of entities that have been in government that end up there and then end up lobbying people they already know on the Hill and things like that, or just the amount of complex like hype, like whack-a-mole of who owns this thing that all come together. Because I think a lot of the times, especially when we talk about these issues like on our show, we're like, well, what's the problem? Why can't it stop?
Right.
Like we get it. We're seeing it. Like the cost is people losing their lives. The cost is people going bankrupt. The cost is untold suffering. And then, you know, to be real, it's like, hey, man, we're looking at you, the feds. What's going on? And I know you've said this too. Like it's the federal, like the DOJ is not the only entity that can go after this. But like, how do you explain, like when people talk about the frustration of like, well, then what, like something's got to give. Where will it give? It will.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a huge issue because, you know, as you started off, you know, private equity, I think, has been uniquely successful in lobbying. You know, if you look at who private equity firms have hired, it's former secretaries of state, treasury, defense, two former speakers of the House, a vice president, former chair people of the FCC and SEC. I mean, it's a really deep bench. And that means that they have just been extraordinarily successful at sort of advancing their legislative and regulatory agenda. I think the other challenge that we've got, and I think you hit on this exactly right, is it's really hard for ordinary people to hold private equity firms accountable. We have this doctrine called corporate veil piercing, which means that it's very hard to hold an investor responsible for the actions of the company that they invest in. Right. That makes sense for you and me, where we've got our little Vanguard account and have like one share of stock in a company. You know, we don't really have much say over them. That doctrine doesn't necessarily make sense for a private equity firm that has a controlling stake in these businesses and can essentially tell them what to do. And then lastly, I mean, I think you hit the point exactly right, which is a lot of times it's just hard to even figure out who owns what and who to sue. I talked with folks that sue nursing homes on behalf of families whose, you know, parents died or were injured or whatever it happens to be. And they're telling me, you know, look, these guys have these really baroque organizational structures where they're shifting assets across multiple shell companies and, you know, sort of across different shells. And it's really hard to figure out who is responsible and who has the assets to recover. So it's a really tough problem.
Yeah.
And it's something that's becoming normal, too. Like, other industries are like, you know what kind of works is if you kind of spread it all around and right. No one knows how to get like seek damages.
Right. Yeah. You tell this one really memorable story about Ashford, which is, you know, a Franciscan University of the Prairies is what it's called. But it's like a really small college run by nuns. And then it gets taken over and turned into Ashford University, which becomes this, you know, Phoenix University like adjacent thing. And it's really this like outraging thing. And then you also mentioned that like the private equity firm that now runs it is Warburg Pincus, which is run by Obama's former Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner. And it's just like, You just see that over and over again. Like the amount of people from positions of power who like know how things work better than anybody, you know, most people listening to this and like know how things really work behind the scenes are going into private equity. And it just really feels like a looting, a plundering that's happening. Mm.
I heard this third hand, so I don't know how true it is, but there was a senior government official who ended up doing some work for a private equity firm, and somebody was chiding them, and they said, look, you know, it's not who's working for private equity, it's who isn't working for private equity right now. So it's pretty extraordinary, the breadth of their success.
Yeah. Right. And just like the greed, how it compounds itself, you know, because now it seems like you're almost incentivized to get into private equity because of how little repercussions people face. And I'm curious, like when you have a case like the ones we've talked about, when it's like, yeah, man, like they own this company and they basically started throttling back their level of care, which led to someone losing their life. Okay, well, then tell me who owns this and that person's responsible. Like when these cases get like dismissed or things, is that the cynical part of like, I think the cynical shorthand version of someone who believes in how like cronyism works and things like that, believe that like, oh, the judges are in on it too. Everybody's in on this. That's why it's happening. But I think you've also raised the point that it's not necessarily like there's a huge barrier to get over, which is informing people of how this even works too. And like having enough public pressure like around this idea or this industry of private equity that gets people to sort of be on the same page to understand the issues.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the challenges that we've got is exactly what you're saying, is education. And that's not just educating, you know, sort of your listeners or, you know, people and, you know, people that are just generally interested in this topic. It's also informing judges, people in government, you know, what private equity is and what the practical consequences are. One of the challenges that I think people who are critical of the private equity business model have is, you know, private equity firms have an enormous amount of money to lobby and to litigate their issues. And the other side, you know, just has a fraction to do the same thing. You know, one of the cases was over this obscure sort of retirement law issue, and at stake was like $4.5 million for the private equity firm. It was essentially a rounding error. They spent 10 years litigating the case in order not to have to pay out because they had the resources to do it and they wanted to set the precedent that they could. And so, you know, we got to inform people and we've also got to figure out how to sort of empower activists and folks that want to work on this stuff so that they can do this work for the long term.
Right. Can we just list some of the industries where people might have seen their work? Because just going back to that initial statement about like we have anecdotally, everyone seems to have a feeling that things are getting worse, but, you know, it's kind of hard to, we don't have much to compare it to, but there, you know, there's presence in the dental industry, veterinary, I think you mentioned grocery stores at one point that,
yep.
You know, they're one of the reasons there are like two grocery stores in the country that didn't used to be the case.
Yeah. Yeah. So private equity is, you know, I don't want to overstate the case, but they're active in, you know, most every industry that you can think of, whether you're talking about sort of retail things, we were talking about Toys R Us and stuff earlier, or grocery stores, as you say. When we're talking about healthcare, it's not just emergency rooms and ambulances, it's ordinary sort of OBGYN and urgent care clinics, buying up literal insurance companies, you know, life insurance, claims at worker compensation companies, to things like manufacturing, infrastructure. In some places, private equity firms literally bought up the municipal water services that you might use to drink, you know, water from your tap.
How'd that work out for them?
Unfortunately, it didn't work out terribly well. So the private equity firm operated it as a joint venture, ultimately dramatically raised the price for users to such an extent that local reporters were saying that people, quote unquote, became water Nazis, would time their family members in the shower and would only buy flowers that didn't require a lot of water. So unfortunately, that's a contract that those two cities are now going to have to sit with for the next 30 years or so because of how it was negotiated. Right. But to the extent you're interested in these things and you're concerned about a business, you know, private equity firms rarely advertise their ownership. So right. What you should do is Google the company name and just add private equity and see what comes up.
Yeah.
chances are it's almost like, what industries aren't they involved in?
It might be an easier question.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh yeah, they're not behind the push for Medicare for all. I'll tell you that. They don't have a dog in that fight unless it's on the other side of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they're active on that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
How do you talk about, like, I've there's been in a couple social settings since reading your book and just been like, yeah, it's crazy, but like unable to like really fully, you know, put into words because it's the problem's like so big and so acute. But like, how do you usually introduce the idea of your book to people, like when you're just like talking to them at a cocktail party or something?
I always explain the basic business model, and I say that private equity is going to transform the country in this decade the way that big tech did in the last decade and subprime lenders did in the decade before that.
Yeah.
And I say what the three basic problems are: short-termism, a lot of debt and fees, and insulation from liability. And if we can fix those three things, we can basically solve the problem.
Yeah.
And that's kind of another thing I want to talk, solving the problem, because again, a lot of the times it's easy to just fall into the nihilism of being like, well, this is it. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't even know. We don't even know who to sue. You've talked about how, like, again, activists have helped to, like, you know, offset or alleviate the cost of like phone calls from prisons, you know, and like actually have made headway there. And like, that's a victory. What are some other, like, what are some other specific areas where we are seeing some bit of the clawing back of the fuckery, as it were?
So I think the prison area is really encouraging. So, you know, private equity firms bought up prison phone companies, started charging extremely high rates for these short 15-minute calls. This was a many-year effort to sort of make progress here. Ultimately, you know, activists were able to get legislation passed in cities, New York and San Francisco, capping rates for phone calls, then passed state legislation in Connecticut, and ultimately passed federal legislation. So they were really, really effective working on this specific issue. Beyond that, there's been really good work on, for instance, you know, we were talking about nursing homes. There's rulemaking going on right now at the Department of Health and Human Services to try to establish national standards for minimum staffing criteria for nursing homes, which will be absolutely transformative. So I think when activists have chosen really specific issues where the effect on people is clear, I actually think that they've been really successful. You know, private equity firms have the money, but activists have the people on their side. And I think they've shown that they've been actually able to get a lot done.
Right. So rather than being like, when you're going to pass the down with private equity bill, it's like about kind of getting a little more specific in a way that connects to people. Because again, like we're saying at the top, just saying the word, it becomes nebulous and abstract. And I'm like, I don't even know. I can't even name.
Yeah.
100%. Versus, shouldn't there be a number, like a minimum number of staff in a nursing home, so someone doesn't like needlessly lose their life? Then be like, that part. But then again, is there a similar thing that gets at the accountability part? Because I think that's the part that really like frustrates me, is how easily they can walk and hide behind being like, I don't know, I don't own it, I just tell these funds what to do, and that's where it ends. So I don't know where the buck stops. Where can people put their energy in terms of like finding that part out, or at least making that augmenting that movement a bit?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good question. And, you know, you're talking about private equity being a boring term. Like, they're working to make it even more boring. A lot of the leading firms now don't even call themselves private equity firms anymore. There are alternative asset managers. So be on the lookout for those.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So in terms of...
What is it? Where like it wears flannel and has a nose ring and like has Doc Martens. Like, yeah, like the alternative rock movement. Man.
But
like
asset management, actually.
Yeah. Sort of inheriting a grunge style.
I'm in an alt fund, which is kind of like being an alt band in the 90s.
Exactly. So they, you know, in terms of sort of the deeper sort of accountability issues, obviously Congress is one sort of avenue and there's important legislation, you know, sort of being proposed there. But I actually think that there are a lot of levers of power here, whether you're talking about federal regulators like the SEC, Treasury, Fed, and so forth, but also states and localities. You know, we're talking about some of these tactics that I think can be harmful for companies in the long term, you know, sale leasebacks, dividend recapitalizations. States could just simply say, you know, we're going to legislate to say if the company's headquartered in our district, you know, in our jurisdiction, you can't do some of these tactics. Or if you do them and the company goes bankrupt, the workers are going to get paid first. And I actually think that there really is interest at the state level on this, but we've got to, you know, folks need to draft up the legislation and there needs to be the push for it. I think that's where the real change is going to happen in the next few years.
Yeah. Right. Towards the end of your book, you talk about different scenarios that the country could take. And some people financially think it's like Japan in the 80s and 90s, like heading for a financial fall. And some people think it's like Weimar Germany. But you kind of say there's also this hopeful possibility that it's like America at the turn of the 20, like 1903. And, you know, emphasize that we generally today don't recognize how bad it was at that time and how like incremental the changes were. We just see, oh, in the earliest 20th century, the New Deal happened. So must have been good. There were Gatsby parties and then the New Deal came through in response to how lavish the Gatsby parties were. But it was generations of people working on very specific changes, right? That got us out of that very similar situation where it was just unregulated capital running roughshod over the country.
Yeah, the Gilded Age worked wonderfully for a select few people, but was immiserating for, you know, so many, whether it was the movement to stop the labor movement, to use the antitrust laws to actually break up labor unions but protect monopolies, the movement actually to rescind suffrage for working class people in New York and the institution of Jim Crow in the South.
That was endorsed by the New York Times, I think you said, right?
The New York Times endorsed, rescinding suffrage for, I think, working class white men.
Wow.
So, but, you know, in some ways it was a politics or an economy that's very similar to ours. The trusts of the early 20th century legally are very similar to how private equity firms work. And a century ago, we managed to constrain the trusts. You know, we created the first, the most robust antitrust laws. We created the Federal Trade Commission. We passed labor laws, environmental laws, passed women's suffrage and so forth. It was a time that was really, really transformative for the country and ultimately, you know, sort of set the stage for sort of the greatest moment in American middle class history, you know, the 1940s and 50s. And so if we've done it once, we can do it again. We just need to have the patience and the will to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a way to offset all the lobbying efforts, which I'm sure if a state starts saying things like, yeah, we're thinking about enacting some laws that would really constrain private equity, you're just going to start seeing ads like, don't vote for this because we're going to leave your state and you're going to be broke. So don't even think about it. And then off we go. And I think part of that is for people to really understand the threat that this sort of untethered greed operates and how it affects us in ways that are just so tangible, but yet we think are like, again, like for me, I was like, it's just so nebulous. I'm like, it's just part of this vast thing of all the money moving in one direction versus also very specific groups of people looking at it in this way. And we're just sort of experiencing the lack of investment on the other side. I wonder how many triangle shirtwaist fires it'll take for us to wake up out of this one, because I feel like we're averaging like one a day.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, you sort of look at the number of legal tragedies that are happening in private equity portfolio companies, and yet the private equity firms, you know, are rarely held accountable. I will say just, you know, as a workaday, you know, bureaucrat, I will say that don't underestimate your power and influence as a person outside of government. People inside of government listen to complaints. And, you know, if you're saying this is a broken system, this is not working, it really empowers people in a bureaucracy to try, you know, who want to do the right thing, to feel like they've got people on their side. So I felt that personally. I know others people do too. So I know that can be a somewhat frustrating thing to hear, but it really does make a difference for folks.
And yeah, just not having it happen quietly, invisibly, like that. When you just tell this story, it is the sort of story that people respond to. It is an all-out war being waged on the lives of people who aren't extremely wealthy by people who are extremely wealthy. Like, it's just, it is that simple. It's they are taking away comforts and, you know, things that people rely on and getting rich off of it. It's pretty straightforward. And I'm glad you told the story in your book. I'm hoping more and more people kind of continue to tell it. So, and thanks for coming on and talking to us about it.
And I got to say, normally I don't talk to the feds, but this has been fantastic.
Well, thank you guys so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Where can people, can you remind us the name of the book and where people can read it and all that good stuff?
It's Plunder, Private Equity's Plan to Pillage America, and you can buy it anywhere you might buy a book.
Great. Perfect. Or Barnes & Noble, also private equity.
I think they might have been, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Brendan Ballou, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right, that was our interview with Brendan.
Man.
I learned a lot from this book. I feel like, you know how when I read a New Yorker article, I'll like reference it at least five times over the course of the next week. Yeah. Like this is, or it's over for you hoes. Like this is all I'm going to be referencing from now on.
So is this going to push out coal gas study, Havana syndrome?
Those are the keepers. Those are the ones
Like the triune god of your mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, those will not be usurped. But yeah, I think it's so helpful to like be able to be like, that's why these certain things got shitty.
Yeah,
you know, or like again, like obviously,
the toy store really fucking did it for me, man. That was the one where I was like, oh yeah, there's no reason there shouldn't be like kids still.
Children, yeah.
The I can speak to kids children. Really still fucking like toys. I can tell you that much. Now we just have the toy section of Target and there are no toy stores. And I remember at the end of the Toys R Us run, like going to Toys R Us to like for a kid's birthday party, get a toy. And it was just wildly understaffed and it looked like Sears did when it was going out of business.
Yeah.
You know, like the floors spooky. Are kind of torn up. Like they're just like boxes of like pallets laying around because they just are totally understaffed. And it makes total sense that they just, you know, private
equity. It's not that these workers are lazy.
Right. Exactly.
Which is what most people was
yelling.
But you know what? But that is the kind of shit older people would say.
Of course.
They'd be like, oh, I don't know what the hell happened here. These people are so lazy. And then you're like, no, it's being like, suck the life sucked out of it from the inside financially. And what you're seeing is like the husk of a once operating business.
Yeah. And this is the fact that this is like in like an epidemic that is across the entire economy. Like more people are being asked to do more work or fewer people are being asked to do more work, like just everywhere. And so, everybody's going to be like immiserated, as you know, like I think he used that word, and it really, you know, both on the customer side and on the employee side, these companies absolutely spread misery as part of their business model, and become billionaires off of it.
That's the wild part too, is like we talk about all the time how like human life gets reduced to like a number figure on a spreadsheet, and that's truly how these people are looking at it when you have only guys who have finance brain being like, I can help operate a healthcare provider. Yeah. Watch this. Snip, snip, snip. And then, you know, we just continue to talk about the ongoing movement of privatization and how that's only going to lead to fucking disaster.
Yeah.
It also made me realize, too, like when I was lobbying for for-profit colleges, like how the
for-profit college section is really wild.
I mean, that was the thing that helped loosen my brain to be like, I can't be doing this. Like, I can't be consulting like this at all. Yeah. But then really, even then, the private equity part was a little bit abstract to me.
Sure.
Like, I was only thinking
just the company
two levels
owns the
up.
Company.
Anyway, I'm stupid. And that's easy to say now.
But we're all part of this system that has just been attacked invisibly. And this is the first time I've just seen somebody say it out loud, you know, in print, just be like, this is the company, this is what they're doing. It is like the most deeply I don't know. It's just, it's so clear cut. It just seems wild that nobody said it out loud up to this point.
Yeah.
People probably have been. It's wild that I haven't read it to this point, and it's probably because the phrase private equity made my brain go to sleep.
I also blame the New Yorker for not making a cartoon about it, which
thank
would have been
you.
Much easier to understand.
All right, we're going to take one more break. We're going to come back and hear from a reader who has some job experience that is somewhat related to this. Seems like it's operating on the same principles.
With one of the industries we were just talking about.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, "We are going to give women meaningful beauty." And I said, "That's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life."
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
And we're back. And the UN's annual World Drug Report, which I hadn't been paying attention to, but now will anticipate every year when it comes out, was released. The biggest mover this year, you guessed it, folks, it's cocaine. Rising up the charts.
Yeah, classic. Man. Yeah. I mean, I guess traditionally the main markets were North America, Western, Central Europe. Now in this report, they're like, it's fucking everywhere now. Like, it's people are starting to use it more in Africa, Southeast Asia, Southeastern Europe. Use is at an all-time high. Like, sometimes they would see, like, it ebb and flow. Now they're just like, it's all upward arrows. Consumption's up, production's up, and it's the 80s, baby. There's cocaine everywhere. And I guess traditionally, even though production is at an all-time high, they're also saying seizures are actually outpacing production. So, you know, mark one up for the drug war. But yeah, apparently this has only led the drug traffickers to go next level with the chemistry. Now, in my mind, the last time I was like watching drug documentaries, it was like probably about like 80s or 90s, where people were just like smuggling them in little tchotchkes and stuff, or like on a janky submarine. But they've stepped the game up. Traffickers are now, quote, increasingly smuggling cocaine base by dissolving it into plastic and charcoal objects because it's much harder to detect. Then they set up super labs in Europe where they extract the cocaine base out of those materials and turn it into powder.
I feel like this is going to be huge for Pusha T's next album. Like, he has so much material to work with.
Oh, yeah. Like, hold on.
Dissolving
plastic
it into
and charcoal?
Plastic and charcoal objects.
Right. Scanners, x-rays, and canines usually can't detect cocaine that's been smuggled in this manner. And they said that their clandestine chemists can use certain chemicals to, quote, lock the cocaine into the carrier products, making it impossible to retrieve the drug without knowing which chemical to use.
Wow.
Whoa. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense.
This is like Cheech and Chong made their whole van out of the weed
Right.
Can't arrest us if it's the whole van. The weed.
Nice try, asshole. This whole van's weed. Now let us go. But yeah, I mean, it's again, this is just like some next level trafficking thing I didn't realize. But yeah, I feel like it. The use of cocaine is, I feel like, where was I recently? I was traveling somewhere and like people were talking about cocaine in a way that I was like, what the fuck? Like, in my mind, cocaine users were like city folk who right. like just getting off a break from, you know, the trading floor at Wall Street. And now it's in all the corners of the earth.
Yeah. The guy when you're like checking out at the gas station is like, do you want some cocaine or do you have any cocaine that I could borrow? What? I noticed you seem to be from the city.
Right.
They put all like they got scientists working on, you know, it's Breaking Bad and they got like, they're spending weeks, you know, putting all the formulas together and then they have a secret formula, you know, that turns it into a plastic bottle. And then you've got to have a secret formula that turns it back into. And then as soon as it gets into some dealer's hand, he's like, why don't I shake a little baby powder in here?
Right.
Exactly. Put a little fentanyl and like, let's see if I can just
cut
like,
it up. Some laxative. It all works.
Yeah, I get some pencil shavings.
The real question is, where do these chemists get all the energy to come up with this stuff?
Can you imagine, what's the arc of that chemist too? Like, is like a chemist who is super promising and then it's like, I also got a bad coke problem, man. So I think I'm just going to switch gears and start working for them.
Yeah,
because I got some ideas,
leave,
man.
Merck and join my drug dealer.
Yeah,
I don't know. It makes sense overall, given like what we're dealing with. You know, given what we taught in our special interview expert episode yesterday, like what private equity is doing, where they're just like taking over every business in the country and cutting staffing so that everybody just has to work like twice as hard. It makes sense that the drug of the moment would be something that gives people the energy to keep up with this shit.
Right. We all just become like husks of a human existence. And then it's like, how about this for a little animation?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's back in a big way, folks. Big way.
Yo, you know that fentanyl is the leading cause of death for men between 18 and 49? Leading.
That's incredible. Wow. That's horrible. Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing that fucking like this story, like a lot of people, I've known people who died from trying to do cocaine and there being fentanyl in it. Like that's happening a lot now.
Yeah. So. And I think also like to your point about, we've talked about like just deaths of despair. That's like a whole category of death that like we're not actually reckoning with. And just again, like adding to this feeling of, oh, society's creeping into like this weird, like stop in a weird way. But, you know, when you look at the, like, again, I hate to keep talking about private equity, but like when you think about how much job loss and access to wealth are things that are cut off from these kinds of like business moves and the effects it has on people, especially people who like, you know, like need to work to survive, all adding to like this background hum of like, ugh.
But what about the teenagers, guys? How do the young teenagers keep up in this world if they don't have access to cocaine? How are they to keep up in this world where private equity is?
Are you pitching us a business?
Down? I am.
It's called Adderall.
Well, there's that. But what if you can't get access? There is a shortage of that. And that's where my good friend Logan Paul comes in. Mm-hmm. I want to tell you guys about Prime.
Oh, God.
Prime Hydration is a beverage that Logan Paul launched last year with KSI, another YouTuber. And it became like the Tickle Me Elmo of last year. Like it was just, there weren't enough of it. And there are reports of people having a bottle, keeping the empty bottle, and then like charging people $100 to take a picture with the empty bottle for social media purposes, because you just like couldn't get access to the drink. So dystopian for sure.
Yeah.
The drink has I have to think this is the maximum legal amount of caffeine that you can put in something. 200 milligrams of caffeine. That seems to be where every like highly caffeinated drink or product maxes out at 200 milligrams. But that is what they're giving children in like kind of small doses. It's
just, I know you're the like the caffeine fact god. What? How does that rank? Because I like every time we talk about caffeinated drinks, I was like, how many milligrams? Because like you kind of have an idea. What? Like what's a cup of coffee?
Celsius is the other one that is maxed out at 200.
At 200.
Nothing has more than 200 as far as I know. And even like caffeine pills have 200 milligrams.
What's
like,
the Coca-Cola got?
Coca-Cola is like in the 30s, usually, I think, or 40s.
Wow. Damn.
I think Diet Coke is in the 60s. And even and like Mountain Dew, I don't think it even cracks 100.
Oof.
But yeah, these are...
Oh, they're saying it has twice as much as Red Bull.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's
cool. Have you seen the videos though where people like to your point about how like it's become the most sought after thing? Like people are stunting on TikTok with how much fucking like Prime they have in their fridge.
No.
Yes. That's... like this kind of shit. People are like, well, what's in my fridge? All Prime, bro. Like
it looks like for my grab and goes for my kids, if they don't have time to make a protein drink or an electrolyte drink before they leave for their practices, for their sports they play. I like these Prime drinks because if you look at, they don't have any artificial colors. They're naturally flavored. They have BCAAs. They also have electrolytes that come from coconut water, and they only have 2 grams of sugar. But
200 milligrams of fucking caffeine. Anyway, so like I've seen so many videos like this where there's like families being like, we got the icy pop, we got cherry. And it's like, you think people are doing like a money phone type thing with the amount of Prime bottles.
Yeah, this is the new money phone, is just having a fucking Prime.
So this is like, you know, you throw some vodka in there, some whiskey in there.
And you'll have partying, heart failure.
Right. That's But that's
not
like
young people. They don't fuck with alcoholic beverages. They just
they got all the good pills. You're right.
Yeah,
they're just slamming Borgs, dude.
Yeah. God, young people laugh at us with how we try to get high.
Yeah,
because they're like, these motherfuckers are dead. Like they're trying to die. Like look at how they partied in the fucking.
Yeah, I get high through this weird music I listen to.
Right, like I don't get high if my headphones run out of batteries. That's when I'm in a bad way. You've got the fucking shakes.
I get high from getting my friend's pronouns right.
Thank you. Boom.
Thank you, sir. You honor us.
You're welcome. I nailed you both.
So, I mean, you are counting on teenagers to consume like one of these a day, which I just can't imagine that's going to happen. And like there's all sorts of laws in place, or like that people have tried to put laws in place. Like in 2017 in South Carolina, a teenager died due to caffeine-induced cardiac event, causing a probable arrhythmia. Countries like Lithuania and Latvia already have active bans on energy drinks that have this much caffeine in them. But here in the U.S., back in 1980, the FDA attempted to crack down on caffeine in soda. But the soda companies, who you might recognize as having a little bit more money than the FDA, argued caffeine wasn't actually a psychoactive drug and therefore subject to regulation. Rather, caffeine is a flavor enhancer. Tell me, what exactly does caffeine taste like?
Yeah, like, is there some, like, a soda sommelier who's like, finishes very strongly with caffeine.
Mm.
Like, were they even able to say, like, it enhances this flavor? They're just saying, nah, it's in the category of flavor enhancer.
Yeah, leave us alone. They're just lying, I think.
Yeah.
Mm. Surge had 68, by the way.
Yeah.
Surge!
68. Yeah. Not
Surge
even.
Shit. That's more than, this one says more than Mountain Dew.
Yeah. I think Mountain Dew has crept up into the 70s, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, this is 54, but I don't know. I just got two different numbers for Surge also, so I don't know.
It's hard to know. Yeah.
Is it Caffeine Informer? That's my go-to.
No, I'm using.
That's my website.
Google.
Google. Okay. Yeah.
It's CSPI Net.
Mm. But anyway, you have to get an annual subscription to Caffeine Informer to really know the facts.
Oh, for sure. No, I had my dad's log in.
Oh, good.
But so stimulant medication with caffeine obviously has to include warnings, but energy drinks, which have far more caffeine, are somehow free to market themselves with no warnings at all, or were for a long time. I think that might be changing.
Yeah.
A Senate investigation began looking into these drinks and specifically how they market their products to teenagers like Monster and Rockstar and decided that their products were actually foods, not dietary supplements after all.
Oh, okay.
So Prime didn't originate the problem, but it's like really at the outer limits of how much caffeine you can put in a product and how much you can market yourself to teenagers.
They're doing that too. So like when kids drink it, they're like, oh, this shit is fucking hitting. You know what I mean? Because like, as you have access to like Red Bull or fucking Monster and shit, but then you come through with something with twice that, yeah. Like it feels like the intention is to also to get the consumers to talk about how this new fucking bag is just hitting.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're not getting it and just drinking one.
Right.
Like you're probably going to like try to, you know,
be stupid.
You're trying
with
to get somewhere.
Right. trying to get somewhere, man.
I want a full personality change. I want to have a different personality after I'm done drinking.
I want to drink
Prime.
Enough that I'm on fentanyl.
It's wild. It's like, because just yesterday, KSI and Logan Paul were in like Copenhagen promoting the drink.
Wow.
And a lot of people suspect it may have been like set up kind of marketing because a bunch of like their fans just started throwing Prime at them.
Oh, wow.
Like they were getting doused with it. And like, even on TMZ, they're like, who knows about histrionics? They're like, and it could just be a very clever way to get us talking about this because here we are, was kind of the literal, like what was written in the article. So I don't know. But yeah, it's fucking everywhere. And like Europe, it's really popular. KSI is like a huge Arsenal fan, and somehow Arsenal got him. Like there's like Prime branding around the football club. And I'm like, this is fucking bad, dude.
It truly seems like just taking a like no dose caffeine pill and water, like, but with branding added onto it.
Like, all right. Tell me if you think this is real. This is them at their Prime tour and they're getting somehow suddenly the crowd turns on them. They're getting doused. But everyone's like laughing. Like the security's even like, all right, that was a good bit. I know nothing bad is actually happening.
Yeah. You can't bring European security in on your bits. Come on.
It's hard to connect with your like idols. And sometimes the only thing you can do because of distance is just hit them with something and then be like,
yeah,
me and Logan Paul hung out today.
Yeah. We had a laugh.
Yeah.
We had a nice little, yeah.
Wow, people keep throwing it at them. There's like multiple things they went to. People just, I wonder if Prime just turns people into fucking animals and they're like, ah, we love it, well, man. Yeah. Fucking throw this
you
bottle
know anything
at you.
Like you give the fans on like whatever day at the ballpark is going to end up on
throwing
the field.
It. On the field, yeah.
Yeah. Unless it's a bobblehead.
Right.
Yeah. Right, right. Because that'll end up on eBay.
Yeah. That's it's weird how like you can go to a Dodger game and like if it's a bad night, these are going on the field. Other things you're like, they're never throwing bobbleheads. They never
would you
throw
like a snowstorm of inflatable bats.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of dropping your baby, I didn't recently at Dodger Stadium, but I regret it. Because I had this moment. I had a Sports Center moment and I failed.
Oh, to like catch a fly ball.
I had my baby in my arms.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The fly ball came directly towards me.
Yeah.
I put out my right hand, it hit me in the palm, and I dropped it. If I'd have had two hands, 100% catch it.
Yeah.
And you told your son that, right?
It dropped. I'm waiting until he can understand me, but I'm gonna fucking ream him out. So the ball dropped and I went for it, but some lady scooped it up beforehand. Again, I still have the kid in my arms.
Yeah. Right.
So then the lady heard my story. Kid's first baseball game.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Gave us the ball.
Gave you the ball.
But it's still not as good of a story as it could be.
That does, you know, that doesn't make you a man, right? Because you would have caught that shit. I don't care.
Buddy, I mean, I know that's why I can't tell the story without like it being sad.
Nick is
crying. I'm just going to, you just lie to your son. What about this baseball? Oh, you should have seen it.
I'm going to tell him he caught it.
Yeah.
Right, well, yeah, that I was going to say it would be like a hyper, like extreme Prime version of the like choose the ball or choose death scene from you know, you got to catch this ball, kid,
because it's public too. It didn't get on TV, but I had a friend in the stadium who saw it.
Wow.
Oh, really?
That was in front of me that I just found out about 2 days ago.
There must have been a collective like holding of breath when people saw a foul ball speeding at you while you were holding a baby, right? Like, was there a...
It's hard to gauge. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they were all relieved when I just dropped it.
Yeah, good. Well, that's... You would have been the wrong kind of on Sports Center if you had chosen otherwise.
So, yeah, I would have made it to the real
news. I commend you. Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Zeit gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.